0015. As Artemis led us through the hallowed halls of Shermer High School, we began to see a lot of strange things. Just inside the entrance, we passed a gaggle of jocks wearing identical blue and gray letterman jackets featuring the school mascot, a bulldog. I recognized Andrew Clark, Emilio Estevez's character in The Breakfast Club, among them, along with Jake Ryan, Michael Scheffling's character from 16 Candles. They were both admiring a pep rally banner that read, "Go Bulldogs, go!" We also saw several posters urging students to attend the senior prom, which was scheduled for later tonight in the main ballroom at the Shermer Hotel. Every night of the week was prom night here on Shermer, all year long. "Hey, guys," Shoto called out, keeping his voice down to a loud whisper. "Over there. That's her, isn't it, Andy?" He pointed out a familiar-looking girl with red hair who was walking toward us. It was Molly Ringwald again, but not the one from 16 Candles we'd spotted earlier on the bus. This was a slightly older Molly with hair that was a much lighter shade of red. "Wrong Ringwald," Artemis said, shaking her head. "That's Claire Standish, the Molly from The Breakfast Club. We're looking for the Molly from Pretty in Pink. And at this time of the morning, she should be right over there." She pointed down the hall, where we saw yet another Molly Ringwald walking to class. This incarnation wore a pair of wire-rimmed spectacles, her bright red hair peeking out from beneath a black hat with a flower print scarf wrapped around it. She was dressed in a pink sweater over a pink blouse, and she did, in fact, look quite pretty in both of them. "I hate this place," H said, shaking her head as she took in our surroundings. "It's like being stuck in the Matrix with the Brat Pack." "That's why I love it," Artemis replied. "Don't yuck my yum, H. Don't do it." "Hold on," I said. "Andy Walsh didn't attend this school in Pretty in Pink, did she?" Artemis shook her head. "No," she replied. "She attended another fictional school, Meadowbrook High in Elgin, Illinois. But Pretty in Pink's characters and filming locations were amalgamated into Shermer, along with the rest of Hughes's filmography. It keeps you on your toes." We continued to follow Andy at a distance until she stopped to greet her friend Jenna, who was retrieving some textbooks from her locker. Shoto took a few tentative steps toward Andy, but Artemis grabbed him by the arm. "Not yet," she said. "We need to wait until she leads us to another NPC. Until he shows up, we have to keep our distance." I started to ask who she meant, but I was drowned out by an approaching male voice that was repeatedly shouting the phrase, "Save Ferris." We turned and saw that the voice belonged to a tall blonde boy making his way through the crowd. He was holding out an empty Pepsi can to passing students, many of whom were eagerly dropping money into it. "Thank you," he said, bowing slightly after each donation. "God bless you. Save Ferris?" The current of the crowd quickly carried him over to us, and he held his Pepsi can out to H before repeating his desperate plea. "Save Ferris?" H stared back at him stoically, then said, "Excuse me?" "Well, see, we're collecting money to buy Ferris Bueller a new kidney," the blonde guy explained. "And those run about 50 G's or so, so if you could help out," H slapped the can out of his hands, sending it flying. Artemis hurried over and pulled H away, laughing, while the flustered blonde boy accused her of being a heartless wench. "Don't get distracted," Artemis said. "We need to keep track of Andy." She pointed up ahead of us. "I think she went that way. NPC behavior is somewhat randomized here. Andy usually visits her locker first, but sometimes she wanders into one of these classrooms and sits down instead. So keep moving and keep an eye out for her. We'll sweep the classrooms on both sides of the hall as we go." Artemis took off down the hall again, pushing and weaving through the oncoming torrent of NPC high school kids. H, Shoto, and I hurried after her. The school bell rang a few seconds later, and the hallway began to clear as NPC students filtered into their individual classrooms. One of them bumped into me as she went by, and when she turned to say, "Excuse me," I saw that it was a young Juliet Lewis, with her hair done up in a frizzy blonde 80s perm. I knew her best from her starring roles in Strange Days and From Dusk Till Dawn, so it took me a moment to remember that she'd portrayed Audrey Griswold in Christmas Vacation. Artemis was right. For someone who had trained themselves to identify pop culture icons from the 70s and 80s, this world was one huge distraction. As we continued to follow Artemis, she instructed us to split up and look inside each classroom we passed to see if we could locate Andy Walsh. I ran to the nearest door and glanced inside, then retreated as soon as I saw that it was an economics class being taught by Ben Stein, who was, of course, currently calling the roll. Adams, Adamly, Adamowski, Adamson, Adler, Anderson, he said. Anderson, here, I heard Anderson shout as I turned away and hurried on to the next classroom. It was the school's computer room, and it was currently filled with student NPCs typing out their term papers on rows of ancient desktop computers. A sign posted above the chalkboard said, "Hackers will be expelled." And that was one of the reasons I did a double take a few seconds later when I spotted the greatest fictional hacker of the 80s, Bryce Lynch, sitting at one of the computers. Then I noticed that Bryce looked older than I remembered, and he wasn't wearing his glasses. That finally made me realize that I was looking at Buck Ripley, a character in The Great Outdoors portrayed by Chris Young, the same actor who had played Bryce Lynch on Max Headroom a few years earlier. Even so, before I turned to leave, I silently saluted him, recalling the dark time during Halliday's contest when I'd used the name Bryce Lynch as my fake identity to avoid detection by IOI and the Sixers. A bit farther down the hall, I peeked into the open door of an art classroom. At first, I thought it was empty, but then I spotted Keith Nelson, Eric Stoltz's character from Some Kind of Wonderful, standing at an easel near the back of the room, painting a portrait of Leah Thompson, aka Miss Amanda Jones, with the song Brilliant Mind by Furniture playing out of a jam box on the desk beside him. I stood there transfixed for a moment after it occurred to me that I was watching the original Marty McFly paint a portrait of his mother. Then Artemis shouted for me to keep up, so I hurried to catch up with her. We passed by the open doors of the school gym, and inside we could see a bunch of girls in blue leotards doing various gymnastics exercises. On the wall, I noticed a large banner that said, "Go Mules, Go!" I pointed it out to Artemis. "I thought it was the Shermer Bulldogs," I said. "The football and wrestling teams are the Shermer Bulldogs," she said. "The basketball team is the Shermer Mules. See?" She pointed to a poster announcing an upcoming away game between the Shermer Mules and the Beacontown Beavers. Ahead of us, we found Shoto looking through another open doorway into some sort of shop class where dozens of male students were making identical ceramic elephant lamps. They lit up when the elephant's trunk was pulled, but one of the boys couldn't get his lamp to turn on despite repeated attempts. When he turned around, we saw that it was Brian Johnson, Anthony Michael Hall's character in The Breakfast Club. H turned away to continue on to the next classroom, and I reluctantly followed her. Just before I lost sight of him, I saw Brian frown and cast a terrified glance toward his gruff-looking shop teacher. We rounded another corner, and Artemis suddenly threw her arms out as she skidded to an abrupt halt, causing the rest of us to collide with her and one another. Once we'd regained our balance, Artemis pointed up ahead. There was Andy Walsh, standing beside her open locker with an oddly dressed and extremely young John Cryer. "There he is," she said. "Philip F. Dale, better known as Ducky, aka the Duckman. One of the most divisive and controversial characters ever to spring forth from John Hughes's imagination." "Oh, that dude," H said, rolling her eyes. "What do we want from him? Fashion advice?" Artemis laughed and shook her head. "Just trust me, okay?" she replied. "I used to come to this place a lot. I've completed every single documented quest anchored here. A bunch of the older quests don't have any developer credits in their colophon, so no one knows who created them. But there were always rumors that some of these quests were created by Kira and Ogden Morrow, including several of the Pretty in Pink quests. I never took them seriously, but now I'm thinking those rumors may have been true." We watched as Andy closed her locker and began to walk down the hall, Ducky buzzing around her like an insect. I recited the clue printed on the second shard again in my head, trying to figure out why Artemis had brought us here. Then I groaned and rolled my eyes. "You've got to be kidding me," I said. "The first line of the clue is a goddamn pun. Recast the foul," meaning a foul like a water fowl? Correct, Artemis said, smiling at me. More specifically, a duck. She nodded toward Ducky, then drew her curved elven sword from the scabbard on her back. Its blade sang like a giant tuning fork as she pulled it free. Artie, H said, what the hell are you doing? Wait for it, she said, gripping the hilt of her sword with both hands. She stood there waiting as another warning bell rang. Andy bid Ducky a hasty farewell and scurried away from him. Ducky raised his voice and continued to shout at her, asking if he should make lunch reservations for them in the cafeteria, perhaps at a table by the window. Andy covered her face in embarrassment, then turned and continued to walk in the other direction. Listen, may I admire you again today? He shouted as Andy disappeared into one of the classrooms down the hall. Poor Ducky, Shoto whispered as we watched all of this go down. Poor Ducky? Artemis repeated, aghast. Don't you mean poor Andy? She takes pity on the guy because she knows he's struggling with his own sexual identity and that he doesn't have any other friends. And how does Ducky repay her sympathy and kindness? By ignoring her boundaries, hounding her 24/7, and humiliating her in public every chance he gets. And check out how he treats other women when Andy isn't around. She turned and motioned back over at Ducky, who had just walked over to a pair of preppy-looking girls standing a few yards away from us. Ladies, ladies, we heard him say. Listen, I may be able to work out a deal where either one or the both of you could be pregnant by the holidays. What do you... Before the duck man was able to finish his sentence, Artemis ran over to him and swung her sword, lopping his head completely off at the neck. There can be only one, she shouted as Ducky's head went flying, taking his blow-dried pompadour along with it. It bounced off a nearby locker with a loud metal clang before coming to rest on the waxed marble floor of the hallway, not far from his now decapitated body. The preppy girls he'd been addressing a split second earlier screamed and scattered, along with the other student NPCs who had been lingering in the vicinity. Jesus Christ, Artie! H shouted. You could have warned us first! Yeah, Shoto added, chuckling to himself. Next time, give us a heads up. H cut his laughter short by shoving his avatar into a wall. I watched as Ducky's head and body faded away, leaving behind the loot he'd been carrying. A few gold coins, his vintage thrift store clothing, a bolo tie, and a pair of battered white wing-tipped shoes with buckles instead of laces. Artemis scooped up the shoes and the tie, but didn't bother with the clothes or the coins. Annoying dipshit, she said, as she wiped Ducky's blood off her blade and slid it back into its scabbard. I never liked him, or the generations of spineless tool bags who have rooted for Andy to end up with him. Hold the phone, Shoto said. Are you telling me you're on Team Blaine? Of course not, Artemis replied, looking mildly revolted. Blaine is even worse than Ducky. I never thought either one of them was a good match for Andy, and Kira Moro held the same opinion. Okay, Shoto said slowly. But I still don't understand why you decapitated Ducky. To recast the fowl, she said, and restore his ending. How are we supposed to restore the ending where Andy winds up with Ducky when you just killed Ducky? I asked. I'll show you, she said, but we need to make one more stop first. She took off running again, and since we really had no choice, H, Shoto, and I followed. After several more identical-looking hallways, Artemis finally slid to a halt in front of a long row of orange lockers. One of these lockers had a warning scrawled across its door in black magic marker. Touch this locker and you die, fag. Hey, I shouted, Bender's locker! H nodded and folded her arms. I always questioned his reasoning here, she said. Don't you think this homophobic graffiti would encourage people to mess with his locker rather than discourage them? Bender didn't think things through. Yeah, Artemis replied. Lucky for us. She turned and grabbed a fire axe off the wall. She used it to smash open Bender's combination lock, then gingerly opened the locker door and quickly yanked her hand clear. When the door popped open, a small guillotine slid down the length of its frame, chopping off the toe of a sneaker that was poking out of the bottom of the locker. Artemis dug through the locker's bizarre contents until she finally found a crumpled brown paper bag. She opened it and pulled out another, even smaller paper bag, stained with what appeared to be French fry grease. From inside that bag, she then withdrew a clear plastic sandwich bag filled with a copious amount of marijuana. Artie held up the bag of weed in her left hand and Ducky's shoes in her right. "We've got the magic herb and the magic slippers," Artemis said. "Now it's time for us to hit the city, baby. Dead on. We have some drinks, a little nightlife, some dancing. Let's go." She took off running again. We ran after her. Once we made it back outside, Artemis took us on a shortcut across the football field, and as we walked past one of the goalposts, we triggered another needle drop on the simulation soundtrack. It happened to be one of H's all-time least favorite songs, "Don't You Forget About Me" by Simple Minds. She already looked as if her nerves were hanging by a thread, and this nearly pushed her over the edge. "Oh, give me a fucking break," she cried, shouting to be heard over the opening of the song. "Seriously? Do all of us need to be here for this shit right now?" I gave her a playful shove forward and we ran to catch up with Artemis and Shoto. As we did, the song continued to play, and when it reached its crescendo, H mockingly raised her right fist to the sky. It made the rest of us crack up. A few seconds later, H's smile vanished. "I'm getting a call," she said. "It's Indira. I promised to check in. I gotta take this. Give me 1 second." H walked several yards away and turned her back to us before she answered the call. I caught a glimpse of the worried face of her fiancé, Indira, in a vidfeed window in front of her. She was calling from their home in L.A., where she was still holding a vigil beside H's sabotaged immersion vault. H muted their conversation so we couldn't hear what they were saying, but we didn't need to. It was obvious that Indira was distraught, and H was trying to calm her down. Shoto sighed. "I know we don't have time for this, but I've been dying to talk to Kiki too." Artemis looked thoughtful for a moment. Then she turned to me. "It won't take all four of us to collect this shard," she said. "How about you and I keep moving and give H and Shoto a few minutes with their ladies? We can call them once we have it." The prospect of being alone with Artemis for the first time in years rendered me momentarily speechless. After a few seconds of awkward silence, I finally blurted out a response. "Sure," I said, as nonchalantly as I could. "That's a great idea, and very thoughtful of you." Artemis nodded to Shoto, then tilted her head at me and gave me an odd grin. "Okay, Z, let's go snag this thing." Then she was gone, running down the street again. I sprinted to catch up with her. Then I continued to follow her for several blocks into a section of the simulation where it was always night, and the season appeared to be set to sometime in the spring or early summer. We were still on the rich side of town, in another upscale neighborhood near the lakeshore, on a street lined with large expensive homes, and there appeared to be a wild party going on in every single one of them. "Parents are in Europe," Artemis said, pointing at one house, then another, and another. "Parents are in Europe, parents are in Europe. All of the rich kids' parents are in Europe." The first house we passed on our left was one I recognized from Some Kind of Wonderful. It belonged to Craig Sheffer's character, Hardy Jens. I could see him inside through one of the big picture windows, plotting with his yuppie pals. A few seconds after we walked past his house, a black and gray limousine pulled up out front and Mary Stuart Masterson got out. She opened the door for Eric Stoltz, and then he opened Leah Thompson's door. Eric and Leah went into Hardy's house, and Mary Stuart stayed behind and leaned against the limo's bumper. A few seconds later, a black cargo van pulled into Hardy's driveway, and a skinhead named Duncan, Elias Cotillas, jumped out, along with a whole gang of mean-looking hoods, and they all ran into Hardy's house, too. We could hear the song "Beat So Lonely" by Charlie Sexton blasting from within. "That party is about to become a historical fact," Artemis said. That made me laugh out loud, which somehow earned me another one of her smiles. We continued down the street. The neighboring house belonged to Steph McKee, James Spader's character in Pretty in Pink. He was greeting guests at his front door. For a split second, I mistook the NPC for the male form of Lohengrin's avatar, which looked nearly identical but had shorter hair. A few minutes later, we reached the Donnelly residence, where the events depicted in Weird Science were transpiring in and around the house. A few seconds after we arrived, a half-naked girl shot up out of the chimney and landed in a small pond in the front yard with a loud splash. "Here we go," Artemis said. "We're looking for two NPCs from Weird Science. Hang here for a minute, I'll be right back." She drew her guns and ran inside the house. I heard a rapid volley of gunfire, followed by what sounded like a grenade going off. A few seconds later, Artemis rejoined me on the sidewalk in front of the house. "They're not in there," she said. "Sometimes Max and Ian leave to party hop when things get too crazy at the Donnelly residence. Sometimes they stick around and get turned into farm animals. But that usually doesn't happen until after midnight." "Max and Ian?" I said. "The two assholes who dump an icy on Gary and Wyatt in Weird Science? Why the hell do we need them?" "So that we can get the third shard, Z," she replied in the tone of someone explaining something obvious to a very small child. "Just trust me, okay? That'll save us a lot of time." She pointed behind her. "We need to look for them at the parties being held on that side of the street now. I'll go see if they're at Stubby's. You go check out the shindig next door." She pointed to another huge house across the street. Long strands of toilet paper were hanging from all of the trees out front. Beer cans, pizza boxes, and horny teenagers were strewn across the lawn. Music was blaring from within. "Who lives there?" I asked. "Jake Ryan," she said. "If you spot Ian or Max, I need you to restrain both of them and then call me. If I spot them at Stubby's, I'll do the same. Okie dokie, oggie doggie?" I grinned and replied, "Okie dokie, doggie daddy." Artemis took off, sprinting toward Stubby's house. I stared after her uncertainly for a moment. Then I took a deep breath and ran in the opposite direction, toward Jake Ryan's house.